ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by David Pollack and Reese Davis.
So you're sick and tired of the same old in the college football playoff, and you think this weekend was just what you wanted. We're going to tell you why Alabama might ought to be even happier about that win in the Swamp, which 3-0 teams are for real, and College game day heads for sweet home Chicago. This is the ESPN College Football Podcast for Tuesday, September 21st. Reese Davis and David Pollack here, but first, I want to start with my favorite moment from this past weekend and the least favorite moment of my partner. Happened during the Georgia-South Carolina game. David Pollack, three-time All-American. I can see him on Zoom right now rolling his eyes and shaking his head and trying to pretend like he's not listening. The on-campus salutes that the National Football Foundation does for College Football Hall of Famers is special. It's cool. I'm part of the Honors Court. I don't even know if I'm supposed to say that in one of a bigger body who helps select the classes. And I was delighted to see that you had that moment in Sanford Stadium. So try if you can to get in touch with your feelings for just a moment and tell me what it was like. Not the veneer. This is our podcast. This is where we get real.
It was cool. I had my mama and daddy with me. So that was awesome to be able to share that, because they were excited. My mom was nervous as can be. She was driving me absolutely bananas on the sidelines. I'm like, Mom, what are you talking about? She was like, where do I go? I was like, we're gonna walk on the field like 10 yards, and you're gonna turn around and you're gonna face the crowd, and you're not gonna say a word, but there's gonna be a lot of people looking at me. Nobody's looking at you, Mom. Like, this is not a big deal. And I explained it to her, and that was interesting. But no, it was fun. My wife was mad, by the way. Side note, she probably wouldn't like me sharing this, but she ain't gonna listen anyway, so it really don't matter. But she was mad because she had signed up to be a small group leader at a church retreat, and my kids both went as well. So she wasn't there, and she was pissed.
Oh no.
We kept getting text messages from all of our friends that were there with the video and with pictures, and that was so cool. And I was like, oh my God, y'all stop sending pictures. So that was fun. It made my night really, really miserable when she came back, because she was pissed. But
can I tell you this? It is one of the first things that I thought. I was like, where are Lindsay and the kids? What's happening there?
She was doing far greater work for the kingdom. So I was very excited that she stuck with her commitment, but it was a cool night.
You know, it's the last thing I'll say about this, because I know that you didn't even want to do it to begin with because of the type of guy you are. But what Lindsay chose to do really speaks in large part to me as to why you were hesitant about the whole thing, whether it's any type of accolade. And I, you know, it's why I'm going to get mushy and then we're going to talk football. It's why I love you, brother, because you guys are real, you're authentic, and you have a greater purpose in mind. Speaking of greater purpose, let's look back last week. Everybody's all excited, David, that they're sick of the same old, and Ohio State at 3 minutes to go in the game against Tulsa, and they're up by a touchdown. Alabama spits up a lead. Looks like they're going to get beaten. They're really on the ropes for a huge hunk of that game. And Clemson suddenly can't find the end zone against any team from the state of Georgia, at least not consistently. So there's this feeling that everything is different now. And I do believe it's accurate to say that the gulf between those elite teams that we've seen in the last few years, and Oklahoma would fit in that category too, with the way it struggled against Nebraska, the gulf is not as wide as it was. Fair?
No doubt. It's not even close, which is fun. And it is fun, man, because, you know, there used to be a saying that like anybody can win on any given Saturday, and that dang sure hadn't been the case for a while now. And, you know, there's been such a talent discrepancy. I think the transfer portal has evened things out a lot. I think it's a lot of bringing a lot of experience from a lot of different schools that are plugging and playing, as opposed to sometimes dealing with a lot of attrition or a lot of misses in recruiting. Now you can really do a good job. I think it affects high school recruiting obviously as well, but no, it's a fun year. Here's the deal. I mean, I got news for you that those teams are still better than everybody. But they can lose more games. Now you start looking at the schedule and you're like, okay, well, I could see them losing a game or two if they don't play their best and somebody else plays pretty well, which what do we say every year with Ohio State and Clemson? Like, if they play their C game, they're mm-hmm. still going to win every single game on their schedule. And that might not be the case, which is freaking cool, man. It's going to be hopefully more entertaining college football regular season.
The most absurd reaction that I saw from it was, and it really speaks to how devastatingly consistent and great Alabama has been, was this reaction that somehow that rather than celebrate that victory, that it exposed great weaknesses. I mean, have you really stopped to think that their whole offensive line is basically new? Their quarterback's new, their running backs are new. And with the exception of Metchie, the wide receivers are new. And they still went in and put the hammer down early and gave themselves enough cushion. It's a fair critique to say that they should have played the run better, or maybe even though they have good defensive linemen, they don't have Marcell Dareus, they don't have Jonathan Allen, they don't have De'Ron Payne. You know, maybe not somebody like that, but they still got good defensive linemen. That's fair critique, and maybe it does make them vulnerable, and maybe it does open the door for Ole Miss, in a couple of weeks. But I think the more impressive thing was they won the game. They won. I mean, to act like somehow that it was not a successful trip to Gainesville is really sort of hoping against hope that they're going to stumble. And maybe they will, but that was impressive. That was a good win against a really good team. Great win. A great win against a really good team.
Well, and I think the coaches understand that, and they understand a great win. You win on the road, it's against a good team. It's a great win. But again, it goes back to our initial comments. I still look at this offense, and as you say, they have new receivers. Reese, we've never seen a run at wide receiver like they had. That was the most filthy run you've ever seen. There is no Jerry Jeudy on this roster. There is no Henry Ruggs. There is no Devontae Smith. There is no Jalen Waddle. You can watch. They're not on the roster. I watched every play of the game, and they're not near as explosive or dynamic on the perimeter as they have been. And they're not as good at running back. They're not as good as offensive line. They're not as good right now at quarterback. But they won, and they continue to advance. And here's the thing. They will get better. They will grow. But I do think one of the things, if I'm going to take away something that was, they could not run the football outside of the first two drives. The first two drives. And with Bryce Young, the passing game, the bulk of it came with the quick game into running backs, which we haven't seen a lot of, that made a lot of damage out of the backfield. So they'll have to grow. They'll have to get better. Defensively, I think people looked at that too and went, that left a lot to be desired. That was not.
Sure. Yeah.
You didn't see a lot of greatness. You didn't see a lot of, Alabama usually sees so much heavy resistance. Like, you got to fight and scratch and claw and earn everything. And that wasn't necessarily the case. So I think that I understand the reaction, but here's the thing. That team ain't going to stay right here all year long. That team is going to continue to grow and continue to get better, just like a lot of teams across the country. But their growing and getting better usually happens at a higher rate and a higher climb than a lot of people across the country.
And that's the point right there. They are one of the few programs that seemingly, in terms of perception, that we don't allow to get better. You know, we don't know. They have to be a finished product immediately. They're not. And, and maybe that cost him a game. Maybe it doesn't. But, I mean, that was a tremendous win and also a validating performance for Florida. It's not get lost in that. All right, I want to hit a couple of real quick things before we turn the page. Worried about Oklahoma?
Yeah. Yeah, I am. And I tell you what, I'm more worried about – like, I watched Spencer Rattler again this morning against Nebraska, and I have so many examples in my notes that I wrote down that – you know what, Reese? He's got to learn to check the daggum football down. He just drives me nuts. He's going to force it into double coverage and force it into big zone windows way down the field when the check down is staring at. There's one example I got, Reese. There's not a guy within 25 yards of the running back coming out of the backfield. Like, at Nebraska played such deep zones, they were bailing out to take away deep passing windows that it just – he's got to learn to, he's got to learn to take those windows. So I definitely think there's – just like every other team in the country, we can point to things that there are flaws that their offense is not where it should be. I feel like with Spencer Rattler, who should be one of the best quarterbacks in the country, and it should be high flying and dynamic every week.
Moving ahead to week four.
Let's turn the page to this week. Start Tuesday's the day on the podcast when we start to look ahead. Now, you have to put into context what's happened so that you get the right perception for what's going to happen. College game day is going to be in Chicago. Soldier Field. The show has been to Chicago before, but not to this particular venue. You've got a neutral site game between Notre Dame and Wisconsin. Notre Dame has sort of escaped. And in much the same way I was talking about Alabama, I kind of think it's to Notre Dame's credit so far that they've found ways to win. I think at some point, even though they got outgained by Purdue, that perceived weakness becomes a strength because you think you're going to make the play. You think you're going to get the stop. And I, you know, not into just making predictions on this podcast, so we make some. I like the Irish. I think are they like a 5-point underdog? I like Notre Dame Saturday.
Super dog me?
I'll probably go off the board for super dog because if you noticed what happened on the campus, on the base of the Air Force Academy on Saturday night, those old Utah State Aggies got up off Beautiful. The deck and brought home a victory as a 9-point dog and not a cover, an outright win, kid.
Mine did not. Mine was Auburn. So I struck out.
I liked yours, though, by the way.
My first pick was Michigan State, but Coach had Michigan State, so I did the Reese Davis, and I switched. And then Dez and Coach ended up having Michigan State. I think everybody saw that coming.
And that's to your credit. I can validate and verify that Pollock did have Michigan State and switched.
Here's the thing. I understand what you're saying about Notre Dame. I also don't think a lot of Wisconsin. I mean – again, Wisconsin offensively has shown me nothing that makes me want to buy in. The passing game continues to be okay. So against Notre Dame, you know, where they're a physical team, Wisconsin, they want to punch you in the mouth. I think Notre Dame matches up pretty well with that. I think Notre Dame would struggle with more passing game, more, you know, athletic athletes, stuff like that. But I think it'll be it's appropriate going to Soldier Field, just an old slogger knocker. Slugfest, people punching people in the mouth. It'll be solid.
You know what? I think that's really part of it because I sort of think about what this day in the game is going to be like. You've got Soldier Field, Dick Butkus, Buddy Ryan, 46 defense, and you got two teams that kind of come in and they're going to play field position. They're going to fight back and forth. Did you get to play in Soldier Field?
Yeah, my rookie year, we played Chicago there.
Was it what time of year? Was it really cold?
Thank God it was early in the season. Thank you, Lord. It was early. Listen, I lived in Cincinnati. It ain't like that was summer vacation by any stretch either. But no, it was early in the season. So it was much, much more fun.
Okay. We'll look at teams that are 3-0 and whether you buy them or undefeated out of the gate here. And we've got a matchup of one that everyone expected to be in good shape, but created some doubts in the early part of the season. And one that has as definitive a victory as you can think of with Arkansas's win against Texas. And now they get A&M. And Pollock, we talk a lot about when you hire a head coach, it needs to fit your culture and you need to not worry about winning the press conference. Now, I will confess, you probably knew him much better because he was right in your backyard. Sam Pittman was at Georgia as an offensive line coach. I was vaguely familiar with him. You know, I didn't know a lot about him. And I am always the one saying, don't win the press conference, hire the best coach. And yet, when they hire, I was like, what? You know, what? So far, so good, man. He has established an identity. They're tough. They have improved seemingly at a steady rate throughout. But they won a big game at home. A&M has a history of just absolutely breaking their hearts in this neutral site venue, you know, over the last several years. So this is a real opportunity for Arkansas to take a giant step forward in the SEC West pecking order. And it is also a necessary game for Texas A&M if they are going to be the one that is staying right there, saying we are the ones who are going to stand toe-to-toe with Bama every year. Jimbo said in the offseason, kick his tail while he's there, speaking of Saban. Well, first, better take care of Sam Pittman's very physical Razorback team. And I don't think that's going to be easy. On Saturday, no. Any stretch of the imagination. I think Arkansas is legit.
I think they're really, really good too. You know, when you talk about Sam Pittman and how it went right, to me, Barry Odom was number one. That was the best hire
on the defensive side.
Yeah. Great defensive side of the ball, head coaching experience, a guy that could come in and be like, hey, this is what I messed up. This is what I didn't mess up. Great personality. The defense, Barry Odom does more with less than anybody in the country. He forces you to be patient. He's going to rush three and drop eight most of the time and then use timely blitzes and just make you play a style you're very uncomfortable with. So I don't think – I think if he doesn't hire, you know, Odom, I don't think this works like it is. Sam Pittman, one of the happiest human beings you'll ever meet, loves country music, goes to country music concerts like it's going out of style. Him and his wife would be at every country concert I went to, dancing like crazy, having a blast. Elite recruiter while he was at Georgia. Oh, I mean, just he gets people, man. Just a really good job of connecting with people. He's got a, you know, big gravitas, a big old smile. So, and by the way, he was ready to retire from football, not far from retiring from football. And his where he wanted to move, and he will tell you this, Reese, he wanted to move to Arkansas and build a lake house and live in Arkansas. Like, this wasn't like a, hey, let's go get paid for a couple of years, see how it works. This is like, this is a dream come true. This is an opportunity I never in a million years thought I would have. And it came true. And I think there's something to be said for somebody that wants to be there, that loves it. And he does. And by the way, hiring Briles as an OC was a great hire there too. So he's done an unbelievable job hiring his staff. Now you look at Briles and he's got KJ Jefferson, who's 6'3", 250. 245 at the quarterback spot, that is a great fit for what he wants to do. And he's bringing out wing T principles, you know, running Sally and all kinds of stuff that, you know, fun with the offense that you've got a guy that can do it with. So I tell you what, I know, Reese, beyond a shadow of a doubt, what Arkansas is. I know what they are. I don't know what A&M is yet.
Okay. Well, let me tell you what A&M is right now, because I know how much you love the numbers. Texas A&M's defense since, you know, Mike Elko took over has been pretty elite, and they've been even better this year. Competition, I got it. QBR is at 17. For people who don't follow QBR, it's on a scale of 1 to 100. It's like you went into a history class, took a test, and made a 17. So they're making the opposing quarterback take a 17 on it. They're allowing less than 100 yards a game passing. Now, Colorado was one of the opponents, and Colorado struggled against Minnesota too. So again, we're taking that into account.
They struggled the fourth pass period.
Virtually yes. Nothing.
Pardon? The fourth pass is a struggle for Colorado. Yes.
Yes, it is. That is true. But I've always maintained that the first thing you do in order to be great is that when you are against an overmatched opponent, you devastate them. And that's what they've been able to do so far. This is not an overmatched opponent. You were telling me as we started the podcast that you were watching some tape, and if everything is matchups, even if A&M has been great on defense by the numbers so far, there are matchups and issues unique to Arkansas, at least in this matchup, that could really give A&M problems. What are they?
And I want people to listen to this, because this is before people are talking about this matchup. If you go back and watch that Colorado game, yes, the forward pass was a struggle, but there's a kid, number 12, Brendan Lewis for Colorado, that plays quarterback. First drive, first of all, we'll talk about why they stopped. I have no clue, but first drive, he had three runs for 48 yards from the quarterback position. KJ Jefferson's pretty good. That guy runs the football really well. Very, very comparable, big, strong sucker. I thought they struggled with the quarterback run game. And here's the thing. Colorado went wildcat and handed the ball off and read the defensive end, but the QB backside run would have been wide open. So I see some spots where DeMarvin Leal was one of the best defensive players in the country, bar none. He's playing true defensive end right now. He's a big, strong sucker. He's like 285 pounds. So playing the zone read, you know, from that spot is a difficult spot. That's a difficult spot for a big old boy to play. But I tell you what, one thing I liked about A&M, they just roll body types in, and I wrote it down here so I didn't screw it up. So they roll, and by the way, this is awesome because all of their defensive linemen, number two, number five, number eight, number six, number 34. I love single-digit defensive linemen. It makes you look Like, it just makes you look more athletic, okay? But they roll these guys in, and I'm not going to bore you with all their names. 6'4", 290. Hey, 6'4", 285. 6'5", 270. 6'4", 300. 6'1", 320. 6'6", 315. Like, they just roll enormous human beings out there at nauseam, and they're athletic guys. So I think they absolutely can cause problems. I think they're better at the linebacker spot than they've been in the past too. They got a couple guys that can really, really run. So I'm very interested to see the matchup. I did not like what I saw when the way they played the Colorado QB run game. They only gave ran the ball 8 times with the quarterback. He could have had a lot more success. So that to me will define this matchup.
Would you like for me, I got to get into character here right now. You want me to give you a little Jimbo Fisher?
Oh, absolutely.
Right. Now, you got to understand, I really enjoy talking to Jimbo. I think he's terrific. And the one thing I love about Jimbo is Jimbo falls in love with his players just as coaches ought to, right? And he'll get wound up and go, and I'll give you a little, this may not be great right now. I'm not really in character, but I'm going to try it anyway. Hey, Davey, I tell you something right now. DeMarvin Leal, I've had some great ones now. I had some great ones at Florida State. There's no doubt about that. We had some great ones at LSU, too. DeMarvin Leal, he was better than all of them.
Better than all of them.
I love it when Jimbo will build up. He's better than all. I love it, though. It's great because it means he's in the moment with his players. It's good. I like that.
What I can say from what I've seen, because you had some great numbers recent. I don't know. Check your numbers real quick. Are they handy that I don't hear? I don't hear any A&M offensive numbers. Do we have any? Because I hadn't seen your offense look real good yet. That's been a little bit of a struggle. That's not the best I've ever seen either.
True, but you know what he's good at? And you know I'm a believer in Jimbo developing quarterbacks. I mean, and also, by the way, just as an aside, if you can play quarterback for Jimbo Fisher, you are a tough human being.
You can do anything in life. You can do it. You can scale Mount Everest. You can do whatever you want. There's no doubt.
But Haynes King, who got hurt, is a more mobile guy. And Calzada is not, but Jimbo will. This will be more of a probably look a little bit more like maybe what they did with Jameis, because Jameis wasn't particularly normal, mobile, I should say. He's not particularly your Haynes King type guy, who's a normal dual threat type of guy. Jameis was a pocket guy, and they were very effective. I think that's what you'll see more of. With Calzada, but they're gonna have to run.
And Devon A-Chain, by the way, Anaiah Smith, we've talked about for years. Isaiah Spiller, A-Chain's
my guy.
Yeah. A-Chain is a man. He is a difference. It's a different kind of speed, bro. It's a different kind of go.
Our buddy Alan Cannon from Texas A&M, I was asking him about A-Chain a couple of weeks ago, and he was reminding me track all American too. But there's track speed, there's football speed. A-Chain's got both.
Yep.
He can do both. Let's look at another team that of all the teams that we talked about that are struggling, relatively speaking, or maybe a better way to put this, not as dominant as they've been. The one that I don't know that it gets fixed is the Clemson offense, because Uiagalelei needs to play better. I mean, everybody from Dabo and everybody understands that, and he's capable of it, and I think he probably will. But you and I have talked about this. One thing that I don't know that is fixable at this point in the season necessarily, execution's fixable, but just physical prowess, is the offensive line. I don't know that that's going to change necessarily. So I think they are going to have periodic struggles on offense the rest of the season. And maybe North Carolina State Saturday afternoon is the team that can expose that and hand them another loss this year, because that you talked about transfer portal and you also talked about old guys. Well, NC State's got a bunch of those. They've got a bunch of veteran guys. So, is that the one, the opportunity for another team in the ACC to rise up against Clemson and not just be some type of stunning upset like the Syracuse game or like the Pittsburgh game a few years ago, and it be just a team that lines up, doesn't catch them unaware, doesn't catch them not ready, not paying attention. They just have some old guys who are capable of performing, shutting down Clemson and beating them. Of course, scoring against Clemson is a problem too, but yeah, that's a problem too.
The problem is that defense is so filthy on the other side that You know, defense is back. Defense is playing great this season, which is really, really fun to watch in college football. So you also are going to have a hard time putting drives together and scoring against them. So NC State, that offense leaves a lot to be desired for sure about what they can do moving the football. I don't think the surprising thing to me, Reese, is DJ played in a bunch of big games last year, and I didn't necessarily question his poise. I question his poise now. Like, I don't know if the off season and, you know, all the talk and Big Cinco and all the personality and all the bravado and all the Heisman talk. Listen, I can attest personally. Like, I was an All-American my sophomore year, and I got all the acclaim and all the fame and all that crap that went with it. And I'm just telling you, if you read it, it'll do something to you. It'll make you feel some kind of way. And I can promise you, going into my junior season, here's what I said. I was like, all right, I'm a sophomore. I got 13 and a half sacks. What's my goal this year? 20, right? Like, we're raising the bar. I'm not gonna get worse from my sophomore to junior year. But here's the thing. More attention on you. You know, people know exactly what you do a little bit more. The numbers don't necessarily speak. They don't necessarily come just because you're a better player. You can be a better player and not have great numbers. Offensively, Clemson wide receivers still been banged up, left a lot to be, you know, desired out wide. The running game is, there's no Travis Etienne to throw him the football and make him make 16 people miss like we saw in the past. I mean, DJ really thrived throwing the ball to Etienne in the flats and throwing screens and using him in the throw game. Shipley's not that guy yet. I mean, I've heard a lot about him, and I heard the next Christian McCaffrey, and I know a lot of schools across the country thought he was that guy, but he looks like a guy right now. He doesn't look like the guy. So I think they're taking some lumps as a younger group, but their defense is going to keep them in every game because of the experience, because of the dominance in the trenches and at the linebacker spot of what they can do. So I look at North Carolina, though, and I think down the road that's a team that's going to put up points, and you're going to have to answer it.
And they've lost Tyler Davis to a torn bicep. And on the running back front, for whatever reason, and I don't pretend to know all of the inner workings, but Lynn J. Dixon always appeared to be that guy who was about to get the opportunity but never did. And I'm sure there are reasons for that. Whatever the reasons are, they won't be Clemson's issue anymore because he's decided to jump into the transfer portal. So that probably leaves, I mean, not that, you know, they've got plenty of guys, but now they've got Shipley who will be really called on without Lynn J. Dixon there.
I'll tell you what, it is fair to criticize. You know, listen, I'm all for giving praise to people that earn praise, and Dabo has earned praise. As much as he's found defensive linemen that are nasty and so daggum good, he hasn't been able to find on the offensive side of the football. Like, I don't understand how they can't get anybody that just road grades, that has a nasty mentality. Cause I can find 11 and 3 and 99 on defense, or on 98 on defense, that are just all over the place, that have a 47 with a bad disposition. And then offensive side of the ball, I'm like, well, okay.
We talked about that after the Georgia game. And it is, I think I recall saying that it was one of the more remarkable things of their dynasty, is that while they have, I'm not suggesting they haven't had good offensive line play, but I would say that it hasn't been great. It hasn't been elite. You know, it hasn't been, they haven't had a bunch of guys off of their offensive lines, you know, as high draft picks, which is not the ultimate measure of whether you have good offensive line play, but it certainly often suggests whether you are dominant or not. And yet they have been great on offense because they've had great quarterbacks. They've had, you know, great slot receivers. That's one of the things that Kirk has pointed out several times, that he doesn't see that, you know, that Amari Rodgers, that Hunter Renfrow type guy who has helped them continually move the chains. And without, you know, with Shipley still growing, and much like we said about Alabama, he also is allowed to improve and figure out the college game and you know, and get better and better as he goes, because he's obviously immensely talented. But, you know, I haven't seen that elite dominant. It's been good for the most part, and sometimes really good, but that elite dominant offensive line play. And it was, you know, I don't want to go backwards to Georgia, but this is like going forward in the same way. You watched a couple of series against Georgia. And that's a pretty high standard because it's probably the best defensive line in the country. But you watched a couple of series and you thought, well, that's not going to change. You know, somebody's going to have to fall down, get tricked, something, you know, for, you know, some huge play for Clemson to score. And I think that as we've gotten into games against other teams, you're starting to see that it's not just a big problem was that Georgia's elite up front against Clemson, but it's not just that, that Clemson has some things to iron out on the offensive line, whether they can or not. We'll see. What other game? We've only hit two or three games here. Give me a couple that you're really looking forward to. Do you care about the Iron Skillet, TCU and SMU?
Run. Whoops. TCU and what? Sorry, I about
and in SMU, they play for an iron skillet. You've probably got one in that kitchen, that fancy kitchen that I'm looking at behind you.
Probably not, actually. Yeah, I mean that's fine.
So the rivalry game doesn't turn you on. What about Texas Tech?
Texas Tech, and I think that's going to be okay too. I mean, I don't.
All right. Well, what do you like then? Tell me one you like.
UCLA Stanford is pretty solid. Like I like what I've seen from Stanford. Why? I don't want to curse, but it makes me want to curse. Like, what the heck was Stanford doing at quarterback? Like, I don't – like, what was the guy's name?
Jack West, and now it's
Jack
Tanner
West.
McKee.
Tanner McKee, like, yeah. He looks great. I highly recruited. Like, he goes in there. He's got a big, strong arm. He's a big, strong kid. The offense looks really, really good. Like, why couldn't he beat him out? I'm not understanding that. And then UCLA obviously bouncing back. Offense answered the bell. The offense did what they needed to do time and time again for UCLA, but my God, their defense couldn't stop a nosebleed. So that was interesting to watch. But
did you stay up and watch UCLA and Fresno State?
No, I went to sleep.
I did after the Auburn Penn State game. Now I caught it in the second half. Watched the rest of it. And Chris Felica also pointed this out. I'm not sure I'm totally willing to go here yet. He thinks Fresno State is better than Cincinnati. I mean, teams outside the Power Five. I will say this.
So
there is no question that they are better on offense. I think Cincinnati's defense.
That's the first thing that came to mind was they're definitely better offensively.
Yeah, that was a Warriors performance. When you get a chance to go back and watch Jake Haner from Fresno State, watch it. I said that to say this. I still think UCLA is really good, and I still expect UCLA to lay the wood to Stanford.
Stanford has to prove it. They demolished USC, obviously. Clay Helton got fired because of it. But I'm interested to see that because if you can't stop – if you're struggling to stop Fresno consistently, the passing game for Stanford can be equally as potent, I think, with Tanner McKee. I think he's a guy that can throw it all over the place. So it'll be interesting. Stanford ain't stopping them. Stanford ain't stopping them much at all. They don't have the personnel – The intellectual brutality went out the window, by the way. They've just been intellectual for a couple of years
now. I like UCLA in that game. I think something else explains Stanford's opening performance. Now, I'm not as convinced that Stanford is back and everything, the intellectual brutality and McKee, who I agree with you, I'm not convinced that they are back and are – you know, I'm sure they can knock off UCLA if the game goes right. I'm not saying UCLA is that much advanced, but I think things would have to go right for them. I think one thing that is maybe being a little bit missed in Stanford's opening performance was that maybe Kansas State's really good on defense. Maybe they're really good on defense, and maybe that's going to show up in Stillwater on Saturday night because maybe the old Wildcats are going on the road and catching a touchdown. So maybe that Wildcat defense is pretty good, and they are the 3-0 team in the Big 12, and not Oklahoma State that you ought to look at. I'm just saying, maybe.
Just pointing. I like that. That's a slight lane possibly for the Superdog. But if you've watched Oklahoma State, by the way, I don't think they're that impressive anyways. I think defensively they're pretty solid. Now listen, Spencer Sanders, I know, missed week one with COVID, and I don't know how much he's back and looks. But offensively – they've struggled for a couple of years now, but I mean, they're not, you know, they caught fire a bunch of those years, man, and they were ahead of the times, and they were doing great, and they've come back down to earth big time. Defensively, it's been what's been keeping them in games. So I don't mind that at all by Kansas State, even though, you know, obviously Skylar Thompson's is going to be out for an extended period of time, and that's, I don't know how much it kills them or not offensively, because I don't think they're that great offensively regardless. But as long as Deuce Vaughn's there, you still got a chance. He's a guy that will touch it a ton of times.
You know, it's interesting. You talked about Oklahoma State struggling on offense. One of the things that I was talking about with someone on the sideline at Penn State the other night, you know, Mike Yurcich, who's the offensive coordinator at Penn State, was sort of, for lack of a better word, discovered by Mike Gundy. And that's sort of where his career started to take off. And then Mike did it again when he took Sean Gleason from Princeton. And, you know, he was doing a lot of really innovative things with a number of really good receivers and a couple of quarterbacks who wound up getting chances in the NFL. Mike found him at Princeton. And now Sean is with Shiano at Rutgers, who, by the way, is also off to a pretty good start. But it hasn't looked the same the last couple of years. I agree with you. They've sort of, I seem to have, I don't know if they lost their edge, but they're just not quite as dominant, creative, explosive as they were for a number of years under those other guys that Mike found along the way.
I mean, is there any other games that you look at? Because it doesn't appear to be a great week of.
It's always a great week because we get to talk about football. Let's do this. What do you think about Florida State and Miami right now? Not against each other, obviously, but those two programs and where they sit right now. I mean, Florida State has Louisville coming into their place. They haven't won a game yet. Miami's going to win. Although Miami better be careful, because Miami's playing the Central Connecticut State Blue Devils. Do you know where Central Connecticut State is located, David?
Central Connecticut.
I'm going to show you that I've lived in Connecticut now for more than a quarter century, like 26 and a half years. They're from hard hitting New Britain. And, you know, they're not going to just, you know, they'll come in with some hard hitting. It probably will be an exercise of futility, but, you know.
By the way, what is Miami? Miami is
a mess. They're a mess.
And I watched them this past week, and a couple things stand out. Offensive line is not good. And we can talk about returning starters every single year. Hey, we got five guys returning. If they weren't that good to begin with, I don't really want to hear about your five guys. So they're not physical. They're not near physical up front enough. And then defensively, I hate to say this, but it's absolutely 1,000% true when I watch them. They bring blitzes from everywhere, which is fine. They're very hard to put a pattern on, because they will blitz anybody at any time from anywhere. They're also very unsound. They're unsound. It's constant. Like, it's stuff that you shouldn't mess up at any level of football. And listen, Manny Diaz has taken over the defense, so this is his defense. This isn't anybody else's. And Miami's in a bad spot. And I just, you'd hope with Derek King, and you have that lightning in a bottle, but him being hurt behind an offensive line is a different story now, because now he's got a shoulder. His knee's already bothering him. Like, he's not a big guy as it is to begin with. So I'm pretty sure you can go ahead and count Miami's season pretty much over.
You know, the unsound thing that you're saying about defense calls to mind that I had a conversation that I had with a very, very prominent head coach a few years ago, who was intrigued by the number of turnovers and number of negative plays that Manny's defenses had caused. And this coach had studied them extensively, and I'll never forget what he said to me. He said, it's really interesting. It's really bold. He said, and there's no way I could live with it as a head coach, because of what you're talking about. By structure and design, some of those chaotic blitzes, in this head coach's judgment, and he should know a thing or two, left them way too unsound for him to live with. Doesn't mean it doesn't work. There are a lot of different ways to succeed. And the one thing I will say is that Manny has been bold, and he's been dedicated to those principles. And it has worked with a lot of turnovers, a lot of negative plays.
But 3 games into the season, they're getting outscored by 50 points.
Right. Yeah. This year, not 50. Working right now.
It's not working at yeah. all. So,
and you know, our friend Bill Connolly, who does such a great job with SP Plus, some bold predictions put out that maybe Florida State could wind up 2-10 this year. I expect it'll be better than that. And I think Bill does too, but just that.
I tell you what, Mackenzie Milton got my heart like this, pumping blood fast. And I was standing up and down on the couch, jumping up and down and cheering for him against Notre Dame. And it was a really, really good story. But that's it's not a story anymore. They're so bad. You got guys in the transfer portal, by the way, too. I mean, we hope every year, Reese, right? Like both these schools we're talking about, we're like college football's better when Florida State's good, when Miami's good. This year, it won't be the year. It's not going
to
happen.
Well, they have to. I mean, Mullen's doing a good job recruiting in the state of Florida. There are some graphs that some of our production assistants sent out for consideration as we're evaluating stories for game day this week that really it's almost shocking to look at the downward trend of the elite recruits in the state of Florida who are leaving the state of Florida. And not, you know, Miami and Florida State aren't getting those guys. Miami has really lived in the transfer portal, which is not bad necessarily because you're a lot of times you're getting more proven commodities, guys who have developed physically a little bit more because they've been in college for a while. You know, at least
I got it, but they're not your guys.
They're not, but they can be. They can be.
But they're not your guys that you cultivated, that you brought in, that you've kind of trained. And I think there is something to you bringing a freshman in as a ninth grader and the loyalty and the trust and the love you build for that school as opposed to train. And I'm not saying it doesn't work. You can transfer in and be successful. I'm just saying there's also something to homegrown being there the whole time.
Absolutely. Agreed. I mean, the quintessential example of that, although he wasn't a highly ranked recruit, saw it happen with Mac Jones at Alabama. Alabama's got a couple right now of big time running backs who aren't getting any touches. It is likely that they're going to wait it out because those who have waited it out, it has worked out, you know, for them. And so I agree with you. It's not the only place. There are other places.
Can I mention one other team?
Well, yeah, one more team.
I like what I'm seeing from Michigan.
Me too. I'm glad you said that. I wanted to talk about them.
I like what I'm seeing from Michigan. I like the variation in the run game. I like the bludgeoning you. You know, listen, this looks like looks more like Harbaugh and what I would have expected from him. And he's got a new lease on life or a last lease on life, I think, right now. And I think he's like, listen, I'm going to do me. And I think he's doing him. But I like the variations that they're doing off it. I think they're nastier up front than I've seen. They've got a couple of guys that just don't like people, which I love. You're not supposed to like people on the football field, just like my youth league team every week. By the way, I'm on the sidelines this past week, and I'm like, guys, stop helping the other team up. Help your teammates up.
Sportsmanship is dead.
Sportsmanship is great. And after the game, I want you to shake hands and tell them how great of a game it was. Help your own guys up. Help them up and then go back to the huddle. Like, stop all this nice crap. And so I love it. I see some disposition. I see some nastiest. I see Corm making big plays. Do I think McNamara can throw the football vertically? I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think he's going to kill you, but I like what I'm seeing from that. In a year where football is kind of evened out a little bit and less dominance, Ohio State, Michigan, end of the season, right now for my money, it looks like I'm in. I like it. It might be pretty good.
You know, the skeptics always accuse us of jumping on Michigan way too soon, but that soundbite, as silly as this seems, and has nothing to do with X and O's and, you know, brutality and mean guys up front, that soundbite that we played on game day Saturday and my reason for insisting that it be played, Harbaugh saying, well, General George Patton traveled by land and Neil Armstrong traveled by air and we chose to travel by ground. You know, they're running about 70% of the time, but the point of the soundbite was not to say, hey, there's Crazy Jim again. When he's in his element, and you said it, you said the key phrase earlier, he's doing Harbaugh. When he is comfortable with his team and what they're doing and he thinks they're good, that side starts coming out. And I, when I heard that last week, I was like, don't know if he's right. I suspect he is, but I know this. He thinks they're good. He thinks they're good. And that's why he said, I think they are too. And,
I think they are too.
JJ
McCarthy could be interesting, the backup quarterback, and see how he develops, because he's a highly recruited kid. And what I've seen from him so far, he can sling the pill now. He's got some talent. So it'll be interesting to see. The quarterback spot will obviously dictate how far they go, but they got some. Aiden Hutchinson's a grown man. Like, that dude's rushing the passer. He's unbelievable. I mean, he can get to the quarterback at will. They can pressure the QB. So it'll be fun to watch him.
Yeah, that's for sure. Okay, before we go, remember the Titans? What did the Titans do this week? You said you don't want them helping up opponents, but what did the Titans do this week?
We won 34-0. 34-0. It was a beatdown. We played a 12-13U team last week. This week, by the way, we play the number one ranked team in the nation.
Wait, there's ranking systems in U12?
100%. I don't know how they do it, by the way.
Where are you ranked?
We're not ranked.
Underdog. Here comes the underdog.
poor North Oconee. We're just gonna try to get in there and fight and do what we can. Big emphasis this week, though. We're big on passing game. We're not good enough, Reese, in the vertical pass game. So yesterday, me and my OC got together for a couple hours, and we're just going to quick game it. We're gonna do a lot of quick game, a lot of spitting on the perimeter, stuff that it's hard to cover anyways in youth league football.
Have you learned nothing? Don't you know that the opposing coach may be listening to this, and you just gave away your game plan?
That's fine. He better cover them all. And if you want to cover them all, we'll run the ball right down your throat. We're good with that. I'm just saying, we got some work to do. So the Titans will try to remain undefeated, but we're going to play some kids that are a lot bigger and a lot more athletic than us. That is the 100% fact.
You'll be ready to go. You'll be ready to go. Before we go, somebody that was instrumental and important to both David and me passed away about a week ago, or a little less than a week ago now, and that's Trevor Moad, who is a noted mental conditioning coach. Those of you who are watching the NFL on Sunday, you might have seen Russell Wilson with a number of messages written on his shoes. Russell and Trevor were extremely close, not only as friends, but also business ventures together, and Russell gives Trevor great credit for helping him with the mental aspect of the game. But Trevor's influence in college football was really deep, if often not necessarily in the spotlight. When Nick Saban wanted to change the culture at Alabama, Trevor Moad was one of the mental conditioning guys and mental approach guys that he relied on for a number of years. And Trevor was on the sidelines for several of those early national championships at Alabama. He was on the sidelines with Jimbo Fisher at Florida State when they won the national championship, and also worked with Jimbo's teams at Texas A&M. He's worked with the teams at Georgia with Kirby Smart, yep, another guy, and Michigan State and Mel Tucker. And Trevor was, you know, he was a deep thinker. He was an insightful guy, and he was a loyal guy. He was really, really good to me and to my family and to my son, who is a college baseball player, and helping him with mental approaches over the years. And it was a big loss, David. He had a tremendous influence on many, many programs over the years. He was Michael Johnson, the Olympic sprinter, but he was a great guy. And I just wanted to salute him for what he did and the influence that he had on college football. And also just to pay tribute to what he meant to me personally. And I know he had an impact on you as well.
Yeah, he when I got out of Georgia and started getting ready for combines, Trevor was the guy that I met with, and he taught us how to think about certain things and how to do all kinds of different how to approach the game mentally. And soft-spoken, quick-witted, but Trevor was an awesome, awesome dude. I don't know that anybody ever disliked Trevor. He just had that easygoing, calm spirit about him. And yeah, he's helped so many people be the best version of themselves they could be. That's what Trevor did. Trevor tried to get you to remove all the obstacles and focus on the important things.
Yep. We're certainly going to miss Trevor. Great guy. Neutral thinking, assess the situation. That was his mantra. and It Takes What It Takes. That's his book. I strongly encourage you, if you're listening to this, pick it up. You'll find something in that book that'll help you for sure. A reminder, the College Football Podcast is 5 days a week, so make sure you rate, review, and follow so you don't miss a single thing. Of course, David and I like to refer to this Tuesday edition as the answer key for the weekend. Also, if fantasy football is your thing, be sure to check out the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. They'll have everything you need to know to make sure your lineup is ready each and every week. David, go Titans.
Go Titans.